and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Hi, welcome to My Chemical Bromance. I'm Joey. I'm here with Matt and Eric, the Magus of Portland. Thanks for joining us.
We're at a Bierlik Brewing, assuming that's how you pronounce it. Bierlik. I'm calling it Bierlik. Bierlik. Maybe it's Bierlik. Although I think usually like the A-E thing in Latin is supposed to make an E sound.
Oh.
Or I... We should probably pretend that we don't know Latin.
I like Bierlik. It sounds better.
Yeah, and it's something that you'd like to do to beer.
It is. I like licking beer.
So,
is it really, it's not snowy. It's not snowing, but the ground is covered.
Yes. It is the Portland snowpocalypse, like the real one. This is our fourth snow this year, actually. It's
yeah.
Our fourth time we've had snow that actually stuck around, and it's...
It was 4 days ago, and it's still...
Yeah, and it's...
12 inches. Was it 12 inches?
Well, I mean, she might have told you it was 12 inches, but it was more like 9.
She didn't tell me that. I promise you.
So each of us have a taster in front of us for 5 beers.
Yep. What are you drinking?
Right now, I've already forgotten. I'm drinking the Noble Oatmeal Stout.
How do you like it?
I like it a lot. It's really good. Lots of chocolate.
Cool. I didn't get that one, but I am currently drinking the Oatmeal Pilsner. And I like it, but it is mega hoppy, which I did not expect. Pilsners are, you know, they used to be considered a really hoppy style, but now they're not supposed to be like this hoppy. And it doesn't taste like classic Pilsner hops either. But the rest of it, it's a pretty solid beer.
I'm having the dark thoughts.
Delicious. Joey, it's okay. We're here for you.
This is a Cascadian Dark Ale.
Okay.
It's a classical IPA, possessed with a maniacal evil.
Are you cheating? Are you reading that out of the...
Shh! They don't know that. Interesting thing about this beer is it is 6.66%
alcohol.
And 66.
So,
yeah,
that reminds me.
I don't know what any of those things mean. So
you know, I've been soldering a lot, and I just got a new soldering station. And the perfect temperature for my soldering iron is 666 degrees Fahrenheit.
Is it really?
Well, it works well. I mean, perfect might be stretching it out a little bit, but it really works really well at that temperature.
Well, you are creating a interdimensional portal, so
yes.
Do you want to talk about what you're making, or do you want to wait?
I'll talk about it, because at the rate at which we are producing this podcast, nobody will be using electronics anymore by then. We'll be moved on to, like, I don't know.
Well, we'll already be in another dimension because of your portal.
Probably. I'm calling it the Smart Alter, and it is, it's using a real-time clock and a library that I wrote to calculate the planetary days and hours and light up LEDs with the colors associated with those planets, and it's motion activated. So basically my altar, when I go to use my altar, I can wave my hand in a special way and the whole thing will light up according to the planetary colors, and it'll be amazing. I've got everything working right now. I just need to get like a battery and figure out the power issues. And so this morning I woke up before a sunrise and I watched my LEDs flicker from the day of Venus, the hour of the moon, to the day of Saturn,
really?
The hour of Saturn, and it was awesome.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. I wish I could have seen that. But I wouldn't
want
to wake up.
You would not have been awake. So... You said that our topic this week, we decided that our topic this week was going to be
chaos
magic. But I don't think any of us necessarily prepared, which is fairly chaotic.
And that's pretty normal for me, though, to be unprepared.
Do you have a pamphlet about chaos magic that you care to read to us?
I've prepared a couple of things on Google Chrome.
On Wikipedia?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to pull this phone and start playing that up.
Yeah.
All right, I'm switching to the IPA.
Yeah, I think that was actually probably my... That was my first introduction to Chaos Magic, was the Grant Morrison video that he did, mm-hmm.
the talk.
It was a Disinfo, yeah.
Yeah.
Saw that and immediately, not immediately, but at some point did what he described, and it worked. Uh-huh. 2 weeks later, I was in the oil and gas industry and making exactly what I'd written out. I was traveling almost exactly the percentage amount of time that I wrote out. And it was amazing. Best job ever. Only lasted 6 months, though.
Oh,
because,
well.
Because the market crashed shortly thereafter, which is the danger of Chaos Magic.
So this was in 2008, then?
Yeah, it was like end of 2007, I think. End of 2008.
Cool.
Yeah, similar experience for me. I tried it again. 2 weeks later, I had an investor for the brewery. I kind of didn't work out well for me either. Yeah. It lasted a lot longer.
It did last longer.
It lasted about 3 years.
Yeah.
But it's still...
How soon before it started falling apart? Before it started
fairly
being...
quickly. About, about 8 months before trouble started. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you get it. You have to be careful what you ask for, because you might get it, but you don't see all the little details, all of the things around it, that whenever you artificially produce something like that, it might be great, but it might not. There are lots of there are lots of loose threads that can start pulling out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've used it too. I don't remember when I was first introduced to it, but I feel like I learned about it pretty early on, because by the time I saw the Grant Morrison video, I was already using it. Like, I already knew the techniques he talked about and stuff. So it was probably, and I didn't read like Phil Hines' book. What was it called? We're super unprepared, aren't we?
Yeah.
Me, I'm super unprepared. What was it called? Psychonaut?
Yeah, that's it.
Or something like that?
Psychonaut.
But yeah, a few books, right? And they're like about chaos magic and stuff. And I hadn't come across those until later, but the techniques were out there, and like people were teaching the techniques, and they were out there available on the internet and stuff for a long time. And I've used it a little bit. It is weirdly effective. I don't know why it works or how it works, but
and we're all saying the same thing. Like, whenever we're talking about chaos magic, we're talking about sigil magic, correct?
But
I've had more luck with servitors than sigils, actually.
What's
so
the difference?
Well, servitor is like a thought form. There's a much greater amount of ritual and preparation that goes into it. So a servitor, I guess, would probably be the equivalent of a astral golem of some sort. Like, you create a... The ones that I've done, you create basically a figure that you embody. You know, you make a sigil, and you turn that sigil into something greater and more long-lasting and stuff. So there's...
Send it out.
Yeah, and
so you walk through the process a little bit.
It changes all the time, right? Because it's chaos magic, so you got to make it up as you go. But let's see, the last time I did one, which was a couple of years ago, I suppose, I made a sigil. I did some of the stuff that you would normally do when you're doing like amulet magic and like classical Golden Dawn stuff. So I think I used the planetary hours and times for the charging ritual. But I did two separate rituals. One of them is where I charged the sigil, but then I folded the sigil up really small and put it inside a clay figure that was also inscribed with symbols and stuff that were, you know, associated with it. And then I worked on creating a construct for the clay figure that was a thought form, basically, associated with the clay figure that had, like, a specific purpose. So you basically program... It's a little more involved and a little more active than a sigil. Like, with a sigil, you just kind of send it out there and hope that something happens, whereas a servitor has, like, a mission that you can check on.
So are you using visualization, are you picturing a servitor physically doing and achieving the thing that you're asking for?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, a lot of times it has to be symbolic instead of actual, like... But yeah, sort of. Huh. Something like that.
It's a new concept.
Yeah, it's basically like it's the step up from sigil magic is servitors. But I mean, there's, you know, and there's more to it's not chaos magic does have like more complexity to it.
Oh sure. The Osmond spares were.
Oh yeah. That. Yeah, and when I was
his work kind of confuses me though. I've never really delved into it and really taken the time to. I mean, I've flipped through books.
Yeah.
That's basically what I've done. I just can't. I'm just like, wow, that's kind of cool, but I don't get it.
I mean, the core, you know, the core concept. Yeah. I mean, the like the core philosophy in chaos magic is if it works, keep doing it.
Yeah.
So chaos magic encourages you to, like, when you really start doing it, you make up your own magic. You make your own system. So, like, I've seen people associating, for instance, like Cthulhu mythos stuff, like basically creating gods or creating new things, or turning things that, you know, like fictional gods into real gods, like that sort of stuff is chaos magic.
Yeah.
Or one of the other things that I've done with it is using chaos magic to embody place spirits, you know, the gods of places.
Right.
Which is also helpful in terms of like binding yourself to a place or getting information or influencing a location. So I've done that before too. So
it's but, because those spirits can be helpful and very unhelpful.
Yeah.
If you don't belong there.
Yeah. Yeah. So finding out or sort of creating a way to appease them and work with them, you know, that's also a type of chaos magic. But it turns out that almost all magic fits into this category, right? Like almost everything, like old grimoires, old stuff like that, like all of that was made up by somebody.
Yeah.
So all magic originally was chaos magic. It's just we watched somebody else do something and we're like, oh, I'm gonna try that and see if it works. So it's almost like the more people are doing sigils and working with sigil magic, the less chaos magic it becomes, and it becomes its own thing.
Well, that's actually the goal of like the Golden Dawn and all of those groups. Mm-hmm. As you become more advanced, you're supposed to take the rituals and use them as a scaffolding and then create your own ceremonies and rituals based off of what the knowledge that you already have. So I guess that's true of all of them.
I want to interrupt us to talk about how cool the IPA is. That's pretty. Did you get the IPA?
I did not.
Did you get the IPA?
I just got the Dark Thoughts. I didn't get the...
I like it. It's you know, I mean, it pales in comparison to some of, like, the Portland superstars, like the Gigantic IPA or the Boneyard RPM, which isn't from Portland. But it's pretty good. It's solid.
Dark Thoughts is really solid.
Dark Thoughts is delicious.
I haven't touched that one. It's all the way over here.
Yeah, I've already skipped through. I think I'm one beer ahead of you guys.
I think I'm gonna hit the Dark Thoughts later, next time doing El Rojo.
Which one is that?
The Arctos? No, it's the...
Oh, I got the thing. I've got the cheat sheet right in front of me. What's wrong?
What happened to my cheat sheet?
I stole it from you.
Altera. So I think with this one, they sort of tried to pair like the rich, sweet malt of a German alt beer with kind of like a citrusy, floral, and like piney hops almost.
Yeah.
I'm cheating. I'm reading that.
Back to Grant Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
So before I get it, I really didn't even know who he was until I saw that video, randomly stumbled across it and did all that stuff. But so everything collapsed.
Uh-huh.
I had to regroup, and things really... I ended up kind of like doing what you were talking about. I altered some things, and actually I was working with a friend of mine in Dallas, and we came up with... We kind of mashed a bunch of things together we had learned from another teacher and from all this other stuff, and we freaking... move the universe for what we wanted. Things worked out well for him. For me, like, stuff took off in Indonesia. Ended up going to Indonesia a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I quit my job, went to Indonesia. We had some stuff going on that was super exciting. And so I bought The Invisibles, the whole series, before I left for Indonesia so I could read it there. And I don't, you know, I read that it's like, it was his...
It was basically like his sigil, seven-year sigil or whatever.
So I'm reading this thing, and I remember sitting in, I think we were in, there was some hotel Sultan or something, and I'm reading it in the room, and I'm reading through, maybe, I don't remember which one it was, but I'm reading through, it doesn't matter, and he's He goes to the scene like the next day, and he's eating ayam nasi goreng, which is fried chicken and rice with like an egg on it. It's an Indonesian dish, classical, like my favorite dish ever. And in the graphic novel, he's eating it, and he says, "Oh my God, I love ayam nasi goreng. It's my favorite dish." And you know, just all this stuff. He's in Indonesia in this comic book, and I kind of had like a super weird, like mind fuck for a while. And is it okay to say fuck on a podcast?
Yeah, yeah. Matt says that we should swear a ton of times because we're not on the radio. Yeah.
Okay,
so
fuck you, FCC.
So we actually, anyway, like we thought things were going to be super awesome and cool, and I was married at the time. And finish the whole series, get back to the U.S., all that shit fell apart. Like, it was a bomb in our life, like no other. Complete, you know, destruction and chaos. But it ended up being the best thing ever.
Yeah. Just
here I am in Portland, and enjoying life. But it was just a weird...
Same way with losing the brewery. If I had lost the brewery, then I wouldn't be here either. So
yeah. Which is probably true of anything. I mean, just, it's life. You kind of go through seasons and ups and downs.
Oh, worst case, you die. It's over.
What's that?
Worst case, you just die. It's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get to stop paying taxes. Maybe one last tax, inheritance tax or whatever, in your estate tax. Yeah, I mean, The Invisibles is not only a total mindfuck, but it is like it's such an amazing story because as you're reading it, like over and over and over again, you're sort of like, I wonder if this is real. I get that feeling a lot from that book, a lot of times. Yeah. And then I'm like, no, this is just too weak. This totally is not real. This is, fuck that. But it's, I mean, it just goes to the amazingness of Grant Morrison's ability to, like, put his experience and his knowledge into his writing. Like, he's really good.
He is really good.
You haven't read it yet, have you?
I have not.
Well, you know...
I've watched his talk, and I've watched a really good documentary on it.
You've not read The Invisibles.
And actually... John, I never got my series back from you.
Oh yeah, if you're listening, John, we are coming for you.
We're coming for you. I want my copy of The Invisibles back.
Wow.
What'd you?
Oh, sorry, I just took a drink of this.
What is it?
Woodworker Old Blooded Guts.
Ooh, I didn't get that one.
It says it's an American barley wine aged in Elijah Craig 12-year bourbon barrel.
American barley wine. Ooh. Sounds intense.
It is. So good.
So, unfortunately, you know, The Invisibles ended, like, it stopped being published, like, 16 years ago. So,
it's still being published?
It's over.
No, yeah, but they're just like...
I mean, they're still publishing it. It's okay. Just the story ended.
I was really about to go after John. I want those back!
It ended 16 years ago. So, that's past like spoiler date. We can say spoilers now.
But I haven't read it.
I don't care. You've had 16 years. That's like when we talk about what happens at the end of Twin Peaks and Joey doesn't get to complain. He's had like 25 years to watch Twin Peaks.
I know. I'm a failure. Big time.
But in The Invisibles, the Invisibles themselves, like so the main characters are part of an invisible cell, which is part of a greater organization called the Invisible College, which is fighting against the Outer Church, which may or may not be all the same organization. You get to find that out in the end. The Invisible College itself is like an old nickname for the Rosicrucians. And I'm reading this incredible series by John Crowley right now, called the Egypt series, and it was published in the 80s, like before The Invisibles came out.
Crowley.
No, it's Crowley.
Is this Crowley?
I don't know. I'm saying it that way until I meet him in person. I'm trying. I want to get him to come out and speak at Esoterica. But first of all, he's a really great writer, but this series is fascinating. It takes place in modern day, or I guess in the 70s. It takes place in the 70s and in the 1570s at the same time. And there's all this fascinating stuff going on in it. But one of the things that does happen is there are these kids who create like a little kid club. You know, they basically call themselves the Invisible College and have these strange adventures and stuff. And when I read it, I was like, holy crap. It's like It's like he made fun of the Invisibles before the Invisibles happened. Like, he's totally calling that whole thing childish without it ever having been written yet.
Maybe we should change the name of this whole thing to the Invisible College.
It's too late. No, we're going to be My Alchemical Bromance.
Okay.
Because.
How about a tagline? The Invisible College.
My Alchemical Bromance. Frat life at the Invisible College.
Yeah. Not to hijack this thing with graphic novels, but... another one. The guy who wrote... the big movie, did several movies.
Michael Bay?
George Lucas?
No. The graphic novel guy who wrote the... You know,
Alan Moore.
Yeah, Alan Moore.
Yeah.
I don't know why I couldn't think of his name, but his series, Prometheus, is freaking amazing because it's all about, you know, traveling. Each graphic novel in the series is a new Sephiroth on the Tree of Life.
Yeah, Nate's been reading that and talking about it a little bit.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've it's good.
It's good. It's definitely worth reading. And that guy is so interesting. And he talks. I saw an interview with him where he talks about, and this is why I was thinking about your book and how you take notes, because Alan Moore was talking about, he was, you know, saying in this interview, like, the written word is magic. Every word written is a sigil that affects change on the universe. Like, just so Alan
it's
Moore.
It's true,
like,
though. It's true.
Yeah.
Every written word is magic. We dilute it by making so much of it. But I was just...
He talks about marketing and how it just, like, completely changes the course of history and, you know, brands. And
that's so funny you'd bring
fascism
that up.
And all
this.
You know.
This morning... I was reminded of a piece that Trithemius wrote. Trithemius was a early 16th century monk, maybe a late 15th century monk, really, but an abbot. He was an abbot of a German monastery or church, something like that. Anyhow, he wrote this great piece attacking the printing press, saying, if you aren't manually copying out these books, you don't really love them.
That's so hipster.
And he was basically saying, like, I can't believe you guys are printing Bibles like this. Like, nobody's actually sitting down and writing it by hand. Like, there's no love in this. These are people who don't know the Bible. Like, they don't care about it.
You probably don't even eat kale.
Yeah, they probably hate kale.
I'm sure to him it was like transmitting the energy
in
the written word and what that meant, you know. On each letter, each character.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Trithemius was a very well-known magician. You know, I mean, he was one of the teachers of Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa. And he interacted with Paracelsus. And, I mean, he wrote the Steganographia, which is great. On its surface, it appears to be a work about summoning demons, but it's actually a work about cryptography and steganography and hiding messages. But yeah, he was a very well-known magician, and his whole...
Does he have an Instagram page?
No, he was super against the printed word, and then when people started doing the internet, he really flipped his lid, and he was writing, like, handwritten letters to newspapers about stuff. Now, ironically, this tract he wrote about how shitty the printing press is and how amazing handwritten books are was printed.
I'm sure that really pissed him off.
And he also hated paper. He was like, this paper stuff is shit. Why aren't you guys using vellum? Vellum is beautiful.
I agree with him there.
You like non-vegan books?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to taste the dark thoughts. I'm tasting dark thoughts now, guys.
Just don't let it get to you. It's fine to have dark thoughts as long as you don't let them get to you.
Oh, that is delicious.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, what did you think of it again, Joey?
Where's my cheat sheet? I thought it was delicious.
What did you think of it, Matt?
I may look the part, but I don't know shit.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tell us about it using your brewer's knowledge, your magic beer lore, your ancient beer lore.
Ancient beer.
To be honest, I drink it so quickly, I don't know that I could really.
So you liked it so much that you inhaled it.
Yes.
Actually, I kind of like took half of these like they were shots.
It was honestly a little lighter body than what I usually expect.
Yeah, I'm kind of. You guys are going through your beer really fast. Have I just been talking the whole time?
I'm just trying to get loosened up for the people.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's my
sacrificing my liver for our friends.
Oh yeah, and so are there any other beers that you think are super noteworthy? Like you really like the Woodworker.
Yeah, the Woodworker's good. Old Blood and Guts. And I've got the other Woodworker, which is a Harshmallow Mountain.
Harshmallow. And which one is, you have it? Have you tasted it yet?
I haven't tasted it yet.
I'm really curious about that one. I might have to just go get a
Belgian blonde aged in gin barrels.
Oh.
With Brett.
That poor lady. I would never want to be shoved into a barrel with Brett. He's so annoying.
He did this to her.
Okay, well I'm gonna drink the Arctos here.
Which one was that? It was the
Winter Red Ale. Man, I gotta say, now their normal red is pretty tasty. The Arctos, I can't really tell what they've done differently. What does Joey's cheat sheet say?
Hey, what was the name of that virus that Ryan was talking about last night that he showed us? That was like an alien?
I don't...
Wait, was this after I left?
Yeah. He showed us a picture of some virus. Like,
oh.
Terrifying as fuck.
Did it have a face or something?
No, it looked like an alien you'd see in a movie. That, like, comes down from space. That, like, drops on the planet.
Extracts minerals from the planet.
Yeah. And then, like, multiplies itself within the planet.
And then you have to defeat it with a MacBook and a virus of your own.
Virus protection.
Virus protection on your MacBook.
That was terrifying.
Huh. I don't know. I wasn't there apparently for that, but
I'm gonna text him.
Man, I feel like we should talk a little bit more about how awesome this weather is, because by the time this podcast comes out, it's gonna be really, really hot. And I wanna remember how much I have absolutely loved this cold. Like, going outside in this weather makes me feel so much more, like, alive and powerful and ready to, like, tackle stuff. I am ready to fight, like, frost giants. I want them to just come to Portland so I can go Viking leg wrestle them into submission.
Write that in your book.
Well, I mean, I don't really want it to happen. That's scary.
It would be fun, though.
Jotnar. Jotnar is the plural of Jotun.
So the snow is to your Scandinavian blood.
Oh, it is.
Earth makes my sun is the Superman.
Yeah, I think that's totally what it is. It brings out my superpowers. Like, I feel awesome in the cold. It really makes me happy. I'm going to have to go live in the mountains someday where it's snowy all the time. Yeah, once I grow my big, long, gray wizard beard, like John Michael Greer, I'm going to go live in the mountains, in the snow.
I've considered that before. The other morning, I woke up super early and walked out in the crunchy, cold snow.
And you're like, goddamn, my beard's too short.
Yeah, I was like, why is my beard so short?
Have you walked barefoot in the snow yet?
No. God, why would I do that?
It feels amazing.
You guys are crazy. The cold bothers me too much.
Really?
You gotta embrace it.
Yeah, you just have to love it. Like, you have to let it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let it into your warm, moist heart.
I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I'm a creature of comfort.
One of the first meditation practices that I ever remember learning or trying was when I was a kid. And I came across it in a book or something, and it was about monks who could walk barefoot in the snow, or who could, like, survive in the cold weather by imagining a burning sun inside of them. And I was like, huh, that's weird. And I tried it. I, like, sat down, and we had a really snowy winter in Roseburg. That only happened a couple of times, so I'm sure somebody could go and look through the history of this and figure out the first time I did anything like this. But I just remember, like, I was like, I wonder if that really works. It's probably in that, like, Time Life series about how Time Life.
No, Bill Moyer.
Who's Bill Moyer?
He's the...
Is he the Time Life guy?
No, PBS.
PBS. He did a series on religion.
Wait, oh, so I might have seen that too.
And it was probably on, like, public TV.
Way back then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, well, no, I think actually...
But I also remember, like, that Time Life book series. I can't remember what it was called. It was, like, Ghosts and Mysteries or something. Or
he also wrote books, too.
Maybe it was him. I don't know. This is something that I
would
like
to... We were
talking
about last night, that Time Life series was...
Yeah.
It was Joey and I's introduction to the occult.
Yeah, mine too, I think, actually. When I was a little kid, like, I remember getting it from the library and just being like, oh, this is amazing. And that might have been where I read about this, but I tried it. I didn't know what meditation was, you know. I just sat there and imagined a sun inside of me, like a burning sun inside of me, until I felt like I could feel the warmth. And then I was like, I'm going to go walk outside barefoot. And I walked outside barefoot in the snow. And ever since then, I have loved walking barefoot in the snow. Like,
really?
Once every snowfall, I've got to go out and walk barefoot a little bit just to feel that snow between your toes and the chill as it oozes up into you. And then you fight it back with the...
With
the sun that burns in your soul.
With the iron that's in the blood. iron that's in the sun.
You filter the divine spark into the world and let it burn away the coldness.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you combine that with... you familiar with Wim Hof?
Who?
Wim Hof, the Dutch guy, or the Iceman.
Yeah.
Set all these records. I think we've probably talked about this. I don't remember if we have. Apologies if we have, but...
He's been all over social media lately.
Yeah, this guy from the Netherlands.
Is he friends with Trithemius?
I think it is Trithemius, actually.
Oh.
he got started on a path like that. Got really into meditation, sort of studying in schools, learned Breath of Fire, and then adapted it and fell in love with cold. Where he's figured out a way to increase his core temperature significantly. How cold he is, like, he set the record for sitting in an ice bath for 2 hours. He climbed up Everest in shorts.
I can't hear you.
That one's amazing.
Can you hear you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Because you're very quiet.
Oh, you got a mic on your thing.
No, that's not.
No,
it's not?
No. It's just this thing is magic.
Yeah. No, I'm saying he climbed Everest in just the shorts, sat in an ice bath for 2 hours, set all these records.
Damn.
Running marathons in the Arctic Circle with shorts only, just from that breath technique.
Just from the breath of fire.
It works. Well, it's not breath, it's like breath of fire, but it's adaptive.
I mean, I'd like to say that although I love the cold, I don't love it that much. Although, you know, I mean, I do like the cold shower thing like you do, and I also...
I thought about that cold shower this morning when I was taking my hot shower. And I was like, this guy's crazy as fuck.
Oh, well, I think that every morning. Every morning I think, I don't want to do this.
And then you do it, and it's just sort of like, oh,
that's amazing.
I'm alive again.
Yeah.
You got to try it, Joey.
I have tried it. It's terrible.
Oh.
As you get better, your vasoconstriction gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I need to, like, that's my whole goal for the year. Like, my theme for the year is...
Is to enjoy the cold?
I made up a really...
Embrace discomfort?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made up, like, a whatever you call it. Where you just take the letters, you make a word out of it.
A sigil?
Yeah.
A sigil. We were just talking about this, like, 10 minutes ago.
It's a mental mnemonic, kind of.
Yeah. It's a sigil. It's still a sigil. Like, that's... The sigils are supposed to be mental. You can create sigils in your head without writing them down, and they're still effective.
No, you gotta write it down. Well, I have to write it down.
You don't have to.
If I don't write it down, it's not real. Because I have to write it down, otherwise, like, I feel like it's not anchored, and I'm like, oh, I don't have to do it. It's not written down.
That just sounds like a Malkuth trap.
Yeah, it is. No, but, like, I started out as it was an action.
Mm-hmm.
It was action. Started out as, so, like, every morning, wake up, think about this phrase. Action, Kaizen, which means continuous improvement.
Uh-huh.
It's a Japanese thing that a lot of corporations have adopted. And then a discipline. Because I've been super... I used to be so disciplined, but
really?
I'm incredibly undisciplined now. And I have been for a while.
Uh-huh.
So it started out like that, but then I was like, you know, it's missing something. What's it missing?
I mean, I can tell about your undisciplined stuff because your hair is always messed up these days.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on with that.
No, that's how I just project the image of discipline. But...
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would, hey.
But I,
seeming is being.
Hey, fake it. Fake
right?
It, fake it till you become it.
Yeah. I mean, if it worked for Trump.
See?
Oh, that's sad.
So, gratitude is missing. So now it's GACT, which is like this, it's easy to remember, but it's what I have to think every morning when I wake up. GACT. Get up, think about it, really just try to anchor the discipline into my soul, into my bones. Now, granted, I just did this like 2 days ago. Wrote it down in that journal, and the bolt planner that I've, it's like this.
Oh, you're trying to make a magic book like mine?
Yeah. Yeah,
but Joey's so kind of give me one as well.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to, now you know that the pen is part of the magic. Like the whole act of writing, right? Like Trithemius was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Or like Alan Moore was saying, every word is a sigil. But this means that everything you use to make the word has to be a magical tool. From your book to your pen to the color of ink you choose.
So then do you consecrate your pen? Or do you go that far?
I cuddle with it a little bit. Just a little bit of cuddling.
I got a fine tip Sharpie because it writes really nice.
If you like the way it writes. But see, I mean, like this is
really
a,
like
this, this pen is a forever thing, right? Like I always have this pen.
Yeah.
And it's not, like when it runs out of ink, I'm not done with it.
You've convinced me. I'm going to go buy that Cartier pen that I saw.
These things are pretty nice. This is a fountain pen. Yeah, I love fountain pens.
I don't know if it's a Pilot G2 nice.
It's better than a Pilot G2. Well, the Pilot G2s write extremely well. I really like them. Yeah, but I mean...
But yours is more responsible than like my wasteful.
Yeah, I suppose so.
The day after we were talking about this, I actually was at the mall browsing around, and I found my pen.
Ooh, how much?
Oh God, it's like $500.
See,
yeah,
$500. So the
Cartier.
So this is a
that's
Kaweco.
My magic wand. That's what I need to get.
This is a Kaweco, and they're made in Germany, but these little things are only like $20 or $30.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I actually saved that in my Amazon.
And I actually have two of them, and the other one that I have, I kind of enjoy the way it writes a little bit better, but it's a plastic body, and the clip is too tight. I can't like. It's the clip is too tight to clip on the things. I mean, I guess I could. The clips are interchangeable. I could just switch that out. But the metal one just has a nicer heft to it. That's what I feel like. And even then, it's light. I feel it.
Where was that pen story? This pen story you told me about in Portland. What was it called?
Oh, there are two of them that I know about. Oblation Papers, which is up in Northwest, and then the other one, I can't remember the name of it, but it's in the Pioneer.
That's where I saw this Cartier pen.
Yeah, here, try it out, right on the... Remember, it's a fountain pen, you don't press hard, like, be gentle. Maybe harder than that. There you go. You got it. Do you feel that? Do you feel the difference in writing? Like, it's... It glides. It aches to write.
It might actually force me to get... Oh, I see.
I know this is pretty fascinating for the people listening.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, everybody. For those of you in the real world, right now, Joey is writing on the back of a menu in purple ink.
With a fountain pen.
With a Kaweco fountain pen. We will put a link to this particular fountain pen in the...
show notes
and something.
The show notes, that's what we call it, right? Not
yes.
A blog. In the show notes.
So is there a reason you chose, man? Is there a reason you chose purple other than you just like purple?
It's actually sort of between inks right now. So purple is...
I'm kind of in between the inks right now.
Well, I switched to a different color. My favorite fountain pen ink color... You got the metal up. Yeah, there you go. My favorite fountain pen ink color, it's usually called something like black cherry or reddish brown. Like every
black cherry kind of
different.
Sounds like a stripper's name.
That is actually why I chose it.
Is
totally,
it?
Yeah, because I figured, you know, if I had been a stripper, that would have been my stage name. And in fact, you know, while I was stripping, that people called me White Cherry. They called me White Cherry.
All the strippers in Portland. I knew it. No, it makes sense.
I wrote it down in my book.
I knew it. For those of you who don't know, Eric Arneson has a special magic book, and everything he writes in it with his pen comes true.
He's why Joey and I moved to the Pacific Northwest.
True. He wrote it. I was like, I hope Matt's brewery sucks, and Joey, I don't know what Joey does, but I hope it all falls apart so that they have to move out here and be my friends.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. This is a much better life.
Yes, it is. I mean, I've been to Oklahoma. I don't want to disparage an entire state because there are, you know, for instance, the Guthrie Temple, for instance, is.
Oh, and Guthrie itself is a cool town.
Guthrie is a really, really cool town.
I'm a little sad that we decided to leave, like, right when Oklahoma started to, like, really, you know, they got, like, Whole Foods, there's like, options for different diets. Breweries, like good coffee shops.
Those are okay, but the Oklahoma is governed by a bunch of friggin' apes.
Oh, I know. Like, and they won't quit following Matt and I.
Oil
like,
apes.
Like, we left, and they followed
us
on media.
And they became appointed to cabinet positions.
Yeah. I feel like Oklahoma, I'm in a giant nightmare.
Oklahoma is a nightmare in a lot of ways, and in other
Politically,
ways,
it is.
Yeah.
God,
but, I mean, I remember... you know, one of the times I went to Oklahoma, I was hanging out with Adam.
Faisal?
No, the Adam. You know, this dude had all his teeth. He shaved head.
Adam Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah, Adam Taylor.
And he took me around Oklahoma City, and we went to like a really cool beer bar. This is back when every time I'd see Matt, he'd be like, "Oh, I didn't bring any beer. I didn't think you'd like it." You remember that, Matt? Yeah, that was so mean. That's totally why I wrote that in my book. he took me to a really cool coffee shop and a really cool beer place. And
did he take you to that magic, like the Mexican magic place, Santeria shop? Or whatever
We talked about it, but I think it was a Sunday. And Oklahoma is shut on Sundays.
So funny, because were you there with me? No, it was me. It was Caleb and I. We went to meet him at this place. And he's, you know, he's very well-dressed gentleman and looks very Republican, no offense.
Who? Adam?
Adam. This day, because it was like during the work day and it, you know, it's coming. We walk into this place and like the guy comes out and he's like, "Oh, Adam, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah." And they like disappear into the back and we tried to follow. And the guy's like, the owner of the place stops us and he's like, No, not you guys.
And he comes back covered in chicken blood.
Yeah.
Covered.
They were back there for
so
a good
much for
while.
That suit. I think is it time to go to the next brewery?
I have a feeling we've got really good sound here, so maybe we stick here for a little bit.
Okay.
I want to have another dark thought.
I think how did
by Jack Handy.
Tell me,
I drank the Belgian
What did
wine.
You think of that? Because I would like to know about it because I might get
one. You want
to
try it?
What? That's the backwash end. It's
okay. Fine. Ooh,
wow, oaky.
Very nuanced.
Yeah, that's impressive. I am going to get one of those. Should we pause?
Yeah, we'll pause, get some more beers.
We'll be back after this commercial break. And we're back. I hope that you enjoyed our commercials. We had to take a short social media break so we could all look at our Facebook stuff and put things on Instagram.
I'm still doing that.
Yeah, Joey has recently had this great personal realization that he gains a ton of validation from social media likes.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, do you want
to
talk?
It feels so good.
Did you feel like it was super liberating when you came to this realization and you were all of a sudden just sort of like, yes, I'm going to embrace social media. I'm going to get the likes. I'm going to wait for those little hearts to flash up on the screen, and that makes me feel like more of a man.
No. I feel like I'm contributing to my friends' lives.
Yeah?
Because they see how awesome my life is.
Oh, right.
I mean, it's not a vain thing. I'm just trying to help the people.
Yeah,
doesn't instill some level of existential angst amongst your friends, you're not doing it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all marketing.
I feel like if you post and nobody gets jealous of what you just posted, that you're probably screwing up social media. Like, somebody should be jealous.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, for instance, the snow grumpy cat. Like, people who see that are going to feel jealous that they didn't see it.
Yeah, I know.
And instead of, and it offsets the jealousy, right? Like, we feel jealous because we didn't build it.
It's true. In fact, on the way back, I'm going to smash it.
I think we should. I think there's a hardware store nearby. We should just get some axes.
It's what Grumpy Cat would want.
It's what Grumpy Cat would.
Let's go Grumpy Cat.
Let's go liberate Grumpy Cat.
To Grumpy Cat. So what'd you get in your pint glass there?
I got the Bob 80, or no, 80 Bob Scottish Ale.
Oh, the Scottish Ale. How do you feel about it?
I like it.
Yeah?
It's a nice, sessionable Scottish Ale.
Is it mild?
No, it's still a good amount of flavor for the low ABV.
Yeah?
It's really good. Maybe to switch it up, I really wanted that barley wine, but I don't think I would
have been on the
podcast.
I mean, I'm charging through this blonde.
Yeah, you are.
I did not mean that to sound as horrible as it just did, but I got the Woodworker Harshmallow Mountain that I tasted right before the commercial break, and it's amazing. It is a delicious beer. This thing is a masterpiece of beer. I'm really happy with it.
The only thing better is this popcorn. It's masala popcorn, spicy.
Mm-hmm.
It even has chip like pieces of. We can't remember the name of the. It's not naan, but the cracker-like bread.
Right, it's naan.
How much was this glass?
$3.
$3 for
a pint of
popcorn. Yeah, that's worth it. I'm probably gonna buy one too.
Yeah, you're gonna get some social media likes out of this one.
For sure. So coming back to, I don't know what else to do.
Chaos magic.
Chaos. Going back to your idea of your electronic altar, what did you call it?
Smart altar. Yeah.
We kind of talked about this a little bit last night when we were hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
At what point would bringing electronics and more modern experience into magic start to take away from the experience? One example we kind of talked about too is the idea of like an augmented reality version of like the LDRP.
Or like the immersive tarot deck where you have like every tarot card has a, like you use an RFID tag or you use something where you like pull a tarot card and the whole room you're in turns into things representing it. You know, so you get an aroma, you get lighting, you get imagery on the walls. Like you could, like, at what point does that immersive reality take away from the esoteric transformation that can come about? And I think that's a very good question, and it's a tricky one.
Because on one hand, magic is all about psychodrama, and mm-hmm. the more you can do to put yourself in the headspace, the better off
mm-hmm.
your operation is going to be. But
on the other hand, I mean, in my mind, like a lot of the stuff that I do is with magic is really tied into sort of like the historical picture of magic, like the. I love the fact that magic is basically esoteric science. You know, it came out of natural philosophy the same way that modern science did. You know, they're both tied together very closely. There were a lot of like early advances in modern physics that were seen as magical thought, such as like Newton's theory of gravitation, which was seen as action at a distance, which was an occult power and not something that God would create in the world. You know what I mean? Like, so in a way, I almost embrace parts of it. And I think that you see this in chaos magic a lot. Like, you see, like techno magic, which I guess is what I just did.
And you even sent an example to us, like, a week or two ago, like a sigil generator.
Yeah, I mean... yeah, and sometimes, so like, the planetary hours thing, like, what I've done is made planetary hours into something that's immediately available anytime I need it. Whereas before, if I wanted to figure out planetary hours, I would calculate it. Sometimes, you know, there's a website that does planetary hour calculations for you, or you would look up sunrise and sunset and figure it out on your own. But it was, like, an essential part of the ritual, right, where you would go out and be like, I need to do this particular operation in the hour of Saturn, on the day of Saturn. I need to figure out when that is. So you do the calculation and you figure out what time the ritual has to happen.
There's a lot of mindfulness that's attached to that.
Yeah, so the mindfulness part is very important. And also, and this is something that I think can never be stressed enough, like, the biggest power in magic is imagination. It is visualization. Like, if you do not have the visualization stuff going on, you are not going to make magic. You're going to, I don't know what you're going to do. You're going to
just going to fizzle out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where the idea of, like, the example of the augmented reality or even full VR.
Yeah.
LBRP.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of was quick to dismiss it, but the more I think about it, I don't think it would be good for a daily practice, but I think it would be a good way to introduce the LBRP to show it's kind of what you might visualize.
Now, training mechanism. I mean, the thing is, when you have something like that, once you let the genie out of the bottle, it's not going back in the bottle. So the minute
so you don't believe like you could just show us about here's like
Freemasonry is a good example of this, right? Like Freemasonry is all props now. Right? Like, you've got an altar, you've got your pillars, you've got everything laid out in the lodge. The master has, like, the little kit full of working tools to talk about. Like, you don't need an imagination to be a Freemason now. But originally, we didn't have any of that. Originally, you'd go into a lodge, and it would be a room like this. And you would have...
Yeah.
You'd have a tiler that might draw some designs on the wall, it might draw something on the floor.
But you don't think they had actual tools?
They didn't have tools. Everything was imaginary. You built it in your head. We talk about it in the rituals, which I'm not going to get into because this is a Masonic podcast and that stuff is super secret. but I mean, you know, once you let the genie out of the bottle, you can't necessarily go back. So I was thinking about that too. Like all of a sudden, like if you always know, every day, if you approach your altar for your rituals and you know what the planetary hour is automatically just by the color of the LEDs that light up when you approach it or whatever, should your daily ritual take that into account? Should you have rituals that like adapt to what planets are in control at the moment? Have I changed my practice in some way that I haven't yet foreseen?
I don't know that it would be negative because you're still not eliminating the imagination factor. You're just taking out... You're simplifying a step that...
I'm simplifying a step that was mindful step before.
But it was, but it wasn't a step that required imagination or visualization.
So right, yeah. Right. So yeah. I mean, to your point, it's the same as using incense and candles. It's just a different form of, you know, stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more impactful, obviously, but same thing.
Just and I'm kind of thinking in a way, like unpop. Kernels are really not fun to bite.
No.
It's your second food injury of the day.
I know. I'm really having bad luck with food today. I'm going to get a steak later and it's going to strangle me.
Acropolis.
Acropolis steak is dangerous. You have to get it well done.
They don't have to. They have great steak there.
But, I've never had one.
Oh, yeah. They're really good. It's really good for those of you listening at home. Or on the bus, which I suppose probably... Where do people listen to podcasts?
It's funny, though, because as we were driving to Milwaukee to Mario's house the other day with the kids, my sons were joking with me about how I was going to... I don't know. It was just one of those things. Like, what, are you going to like take us by the strip club and make us get food at the window outside while you go inside to have a sandwich? I'm like...
They've seen the Acropolis.
I was like, actually, that's a great idea. That's
the Acropolis has a window.
Yeah, does it? Because I told it when one of my son's friends was in town from Oklahoma, I was like, well, like, you guys can go over there. You're not going to be able to get in, but you can get a really, really good food at the window. Maybe you should try that. Don't go to the 18-year places. They're super shady, I think. They're in bad parts of town. Plus, I don't want your friend's mom to find out. Be really angry with me.
Joey's a super good influence. Yeah. He's available for babysitting.
I am. Send him over.
Rock bottom rates.
send them to the Pacific Northwest from Oklahoma and they'll never want to go back again.
You do have to provide all the babysitting money up front in ones, though.
I like the way you do business.
But I was saying, like, I feel like...
So you'd be completely against the idea of like, the...
I wouldn't be completely against it. I just think that it's something that we need to be cautious about, or you need to be cautious about it while you're doing it. Like, it sucks to... I mean, I think about that a lot. Like, how much have, like, special effects and visual effects and, like, movies and stuff influenced the way that I visualize things? Mm-hmm. And it kind of bugs me because it makes me realize that being original in your visualizations or being, or having, like, visualizations and imagination that is producing, like, original images is very, very tough and elusive for people who
aren't, like... Sometimes it takes years.
Yeah, but... Yeah,
it did for me.
Yeah, but I mean, but even so, like, if I ask you to imagine, I don't know, like, dark energy coming out of a dark star, you're probably going to think of something that you saw in a movie, and you're going to be like, ooh, it looks like that. Probably purple. And
well,
and all of a sudden, you're not seeing an image that you've created, but an image that somebody else has created that you are recreating instead.
That's true. And, you know, yeah, back in the day when I really got back into this, was doing extensive practice.
2008.
Before that, actually.
Well, that's not what I have in my book.
But it was before that, and but I was doing morning and night rituals, mm-hmm. and sometimes during the middle of the day, if I, you know, was able to find a private spot.
Uh-huh.
I was really, really working hard at building my imagination and being mm-hmm. able to do the rituals correctly and all of these things. And it just, something clicked after a few months, and I would go to sleep at night, and it wasn't like I was sleeping. It was like I was popping out into kind of like a weird physical / astral plane. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would encounter beings and they would be just fine. Sometimes they wouldn't. When they weren't, it was like, it was second nature. I didn't have to think about it. Boom, I'd pop back. You know, I would defend myself mm-hmm. with symbols and signs that manifested like electric fucking lightning thunder
uh-huh.
in front of me, and the being would be gone. If it was, you know, a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was important because I was building that in the physical realm, mm-hmm. in Malkuth, but in I was practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to practice it because I had, you know, it was like putting that imprint, that carbon copy within my consciousness from this point, you know.
We're going to send that segment to all of Joey's clients.
That's actually going to be my business model.
Yeah, it's going to all be printed in really tiny print on the back of your business card.
Are you bothered by creatures in the night?
Me too. We've got something in common. Buy my product.
Hashtag marketing.
Did I tell you guys about Kabbalah Club? You guys know about Kabbalah Club?
No.
First rule of Kabbalah Club.
The first rule of Kabbalah Club is tell your friends about Kabbalah Club because they might want to
on a podcast.
No, it's happening at the Scottish Rite. It's only for Scottish Rite Masons, but we're gonna. I'm running a Kabbalah Club.
That's actually a great
It's spelled
idea.
With Qs. Kabbalah with a Q and Club with a Q.
I like it.
Yeah.
QQ.
When's it start?
The fourth Tuesday of this month.
So those of you listening now, set your time circuits.
When I say this month, I mean January of 2017. You're probably listening to this in like June of 2024 after Matt finishes processing the rest of our podcasts.
So the second Tuesday of every month?
It's the fourth.
Fourth.
Fourth Tuesday of every month. And we're going to start with Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford's Chicken Kabbalah as an intro text. And then I'm not sure what we're going to do after that. I'm kind of hoping that, I mean, there are some really good students of Kabbalah at Portland Scottish Rite. So I'm hoping that we get some really experienced people to show up and sort of have like a mentor-student thing started.
Apparently I only go to four places in my life. Sorry.
Do you like them all on Facebook though?
No.
Oh.
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 Maybe. Oh. I'll have to look into that. I'm trying to figure it all out.
But I'm kind of hoping that there'll be some kind of like mentor student thing that can get started up, because I'm not the most knowledgeable, as I'm sure our readers, our listeners figured out during our Kabbalah episode that Joey missed.
He's missed the last two.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't really, he's not committed. He's like,
he's just kind of phoned it in.
I think he's sort of thinking to himself, this isn't going to get me very many social media likes. So I'll show up every third episode, and everybody will get way more excited about those episodes, and those will get...
This is the Joey episode.
Featuring Joey.
You can just skip the ones in between. Just go to the Joey episodes.
Those without Joey are like the Marge release episodes of The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah, nobody cares about them. It's just the two of us crying. Where's Joey?
There used to be this podcast, these two guys that were in college that did this conspiracy podcast. I can't even remember the name of it. It was like... the first thing that got me into podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were awesome. And they had, not every episode, but maybe every fourth episode, a guy would join who like would talk about Crowley and other things that was outside of these guys' knowledge. And those are the podcasts that I really liked. So
so you're trying to do that.
Now that's what I'm doing subconsciously. I'm sorry.
He's like that one time when you decided to get whipped cream in your Irish coffee or whatever. That's Joey's role. He's like, every once in a while.
No, we should do this more often. This is fun.
We do it more often.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, what was Matt like? And I, you know, the ones who really care about the pop.
You know, when you're 52 years old and you're raising four kids.
Wait, who has four kids?
Actually, nobody. I have four adults.
Yeah, that's true. You do have four adults. How many of them are in college now?
Three.
Three of the four.
So you only have one left?
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm's at home, but he's in college.
Uh-huh.
You know, they went to the community college because we moved here halfway through a senior year and in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this next year, him and Malvin, they're trying to get into the University of Washington, which...
Huskies?
Yeah.
Mm.
Which would be great.
So you're going to have two Cougs and two Huskies.
Two Cougars and two Huskies.
I mean, it's going to be constant like conflict every holiday. Or like if they don't get accepted for whatever reason, because who knows? I thought the girls were going to get accepted there, but they didn't because for whatever reason. And if they don't get accepted there, they'll go to Pullman to WSU. So they'll all four be going the Cougars, which will be... that'll be cool.
Are you shipped Cougar Gold cheese for being a
Can you get us some Cougar Gold?
Cougar Gold?
Have you had this cheese yet?
I've seen it, but I've not bought it because it's expensive.
So
for those of you
who
don't know, like, Pete, you're not in the Pacific Northwest, so Washington State.
Yeah, WSU, yeah.
No, UW. It's University of Washington. It's the Cougars.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
WSU. No, UW.
Is that WSU?
WSU. Washington State University.
All of that stuff north of the river is super confusing. Like, nothing makes sense up there.
Washington State.
They don't even have public
beaches.
They must
have a robust cheese program
in
their college.
It dates back to World War II, I think. Yeah. They basically were given a grant to develop food that can be shelf-stable forever.
So if you go into stores in the Pacific Northwest, you can find these large cans of cheese, which is supposedly really good, but I've yet to have it.
It's so amazing, and it ages in the can.
They're actually...
it gets better and better.
WSU has one of the best ag schools in the country.
Mm-hmm.
What other podcasts can you listen to three guys talk about beer?
Beer, cheese, and the occult. Oh, next time we should do Cheese Bar.
Cheese Bar.
Oh,
we should have podcasted today. There was a bourbon and bacon fest. It's important.
Cheese Bar is better.
Cheese Bar.
Yeah. We should go to Cheese Bar and we should just eat shit tons of... because they have good beer there, too.
Really?
You guys don't even know about Cheese Bar.
No.
Podcast people, our next episode is going to be at Cheese Bar, and it's going to be about... we need a topic. It's your turn to pick. Because you haven't been here. Come on. Just spit something out. Something occultish.
Sex magic.
Oh, fuck.
No, it doesn't have to be sex magic.
I think we are, did we? Okay, yeah. Oh, actually, we're going to do a we're going to record another podcast tomorrow.
Yes.
We're going to do two this weekend. So yes. That,
oh, yeah, let's do that. That'd be fun.
So I think actually maybe we should make a podcast about other worlds.
Multiverses?
Well, I think it's going to fit in.
Or dimensions.
I don't even want to try to define it. I just want to say other worlds.
Yes.
Yes. It's going to be about the Mormon afterlife.
If certain people don't check it out.
Yeah.
I'm talking about myself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's no chickening out. Other worlds. Okay. And then after that, the podcast after that, I don't know when we will record it. That will be about sex magic at Cheese Bar.
Yeah. Let's do it.
That's an appropriate place to talk about sex magic.
It's Cheese Bar.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the smell alone.
You know, there actually, as a precursor to that episode...
Your drunk doesn't smell like Stilton?
There was this interesting article, I think it might have been on Vice, about this new sex magic movement.
There's a movement?
There's a new one?
Oh, yeah.
Sex magic revival?
Wow, what do they call it?
It's not sex magic, it's like hipster sex magic.
Oh. Well, I mean, at least Matt's got the glasses for it. I guess we're going to have to get Matt laid.
No, it's a very bastardized version. I mean, I guess it probably could work, maybe. I mean, I'm sure it does for the people that really believe it, obviously, because that's what it needs. But
well,
it's very basic. It's very, like, new age sex magic kind of stuff, you know? It's like a mix of yoga.
I don't know if sex magic really has to be that complicated.
We don't have to talk about it now.
Okay,
we'll go to Cheese Bar.
Yeah, you might
and we'll talk
right.
about cheese. We'll talk about
cheese sex.
Cheesy sex magic.
Cheese sex magic.
Cheesy sex magic.
Cheese the new
sex.
Red Hot Chili Peppers album.
No. Cheesy sex magic.
Cheesy sex magic with beer. It'll be awesome. We'll love. We can. You know what we could do? We could go to Cheese Bar and get like a picnic full of cheese and beer. And then we could hike up to the top of Mount Tabor, which is right there, and it's super short, and it's not a mountain. Don't get too excited. It only takes like 15 minutes to get to the top.
He's got a hiking boner.
Which would be appropriate.
But maybe that's what we'll do next time. But I think we should wrap it up. Do we have closing words?
Maybe we should do this next one, the sex magic broadcast at a strip club in Portland.
Strip clubs.
I don't think Tattoo Face at Sassy's would appreciate us doing a podcast.
I think he would love it if we brought him a glass full of popcorn.
I think we could probably find a strip club that would do that, but it's just too noisy. They wouldn't appreciate it.
So on that note, thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Hail Aris.
Hail Aris.
Yes. I'm going to go.